Hello and welcome to Condensed History Gems with me, Greg Chapman.
And me, Jem Deducci.
And we're going to do a sort of an interview episode today, although we haven't started it with our traditional joke where Jem tells you he's going to interview his special guest, me. But, Jem, I have exciting news.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. This is all on you, actually. We are going to be doing a special interview today that Greg doesn't know anything about. It's going to be with Kevin over there. So, Greg, could you just go away while I speak to
Kevin?
I'm kidding. With Kevin. Yes. So,
exciting news.
Gregory Chapman, you have finally climbed the mountain that is The Last Airship.
I finally climbed the mountain that is episode one of The Last Airship. Yes, I'll tell you what. When's episode two out? Episode two is out. Let's see, when is this podcast going up? Episode two is out yesterday, so by the time you're actually listening to this, episode one and episode two are both out and available to go and watch. And, well, Jem, you've seen the first episode. I've been living this for months, but you know more what other people want to know about it. So I'm going to let you do the classic interviewer thing on me.
Well, obviously, I've seen your piece here, and I have to say, it's tempting to be slightly silly. I won't be. Look, this has been you slogged your guts out. I'm going to argue, and I'd like to get your thoughts on this. Is this the most effort and longest amount of time you've ever put into just one project?
I'm glad you said project, because if you'd said anything, then I would have had to think really long and hard, and I could have gotten a lot of trouble
with my fiancé playing
the wedding. But yeah, no, in terms of a project, do you know what? For a singular project, I think quite definitely more hours, more time to work on a single project, I would say definitely. You know, when I'm working on a shows, a lot of that is bringing in stuff that I've worked on before. You know, sort of I spent more time juggling, obviously, than I've spent on this, but that's over a lifetime. But in an intense period, yes, this is definitely the most time and effort I've put on a single project. Yeah, I actually worked, Jem. It's a shock for everyone.
Wow. But I mean, it was the persistence that you showed on this one. The way I'm thinking about this is you could listen to this podcast whilst watching all of the episodes back to back, if you like, with the sound turned down. So this, if you like, is the director's commentary, if you like. Now, one of the things that I've already said this to you, so you know, I'm going to use the word shocked. It's like, hang on, is the colour gone? Oh, no, it's in black and white. And I was not expecting that. Obviously, there are computer graphics in there. It's brand new. It's shot on digital. So, you know, there's no reason why it can't be in colour. But you decided to go black and white. We've already had this conversation. But please tell the listeners why you decided to go for that.
Do you know what? There are so many reasons, and I'm not sure which particular reasons I mentioned when we had our little conversation about it. So I'm going to go sort of, there's various reasons why I did it. The main one is that when I started working on the series, it was actually born out of a couple of short videos that I'd done previously, actually with Flick, who's the co-star, also my fiance, she's the co-star in this. And they were silly videos that we'd made very, very quickly at steampunk events. And we had done them in black and white because steampunk is old-fashioned. And I knew straight away I wanted to keep that old-fashioned feel. And also, being a huge fan of silent movies of Chaplin, this isn't a silent film by any stretch of the imagination. But I wanted to keep that feel. And I do have moments in there where I've allowed myself to play with certain silent movie cliches and tropes. I have got a moment in there where I do use word boards as part of one particular moment to play a gag.
Yes, you do. Yeah.
And different things like that. And I wanted to be able to use these silent movie. And also, if you actually watch the series through, there are big long watch the episode through. There are big long silent sections. There are sections that aren't just done as silent comedy. Sometimes they've got talking over the top by someone else. Sometimes they've just got music running underneath. But I wanted it all to have this very old-fashioned feel. And I also kind of deliberately, and people will notice this with some of the, certainly some of the effects in this one. I think there's one or two of the moments in the computer-generated effects in this particular episode. And you'll notice it coming up in the future episodes as well with some of the ways I've done things using miniature sets and all sorts of other things. I wanted it to have a very much an on-set feel. I wanted it to feel like it was an old-fashioned production, like it was done old-fashioned, even though I'm using modern effects. If you see a modern film today, they try and make sure everything is perfect and accurate and it feels like you're exactly in that time, and you don't get the impression that in the old-fashioned days, you know, basically what they did was they built a theatre and they filmed the theatre set. And that's kind of the feel I wanted to keep with this. I wanted to feel old-fashioned, and because it feels old-fashioned, I had basically two choices. In my own head, I had black and white or sepia, and I thought sepia, well, that's when coloured photographs, you know, when things sort of fade a bit, and I thought I want it to feel fresh and clear and crisp, and so I went with a black and white. And there are discussions about possibly we're going to be making some limited edition DVDs and things about having some of the colour versions out there, because there's certain elements, certain scenes where colours, the opening scene where we've got two people talking in an old, it's actually the train story centre on the Isle of Wight, but against some old carriages, where colours really were beautiful in that shot, and it's all shot with beautiful colours and then turned into black and white. So maybe there'll be a colour version later, maybe there won't, but artistically I wanted the black and white for that reason.
Well, of course, you're also jumping on the zeitgeist of Hollywood as well, because Mad Max Fury Road, which is a beautiful film, a number of people had seen the rushes, which were in black and white for speed, and a number of people thought, you know what, it looks better black and white. So there is the Mad Max Fury Road Chrome Edition, which is black and white, and indeed it's the same thing with Logan that came out in 2017. It, in the cinema, it was colour, but on the DVD you can watch it all in black and white, because it is a kind of an old-fashioned movie. Although it's about a superhero, it's very much influenced by some of the classic westerns, and therefore it isn't necessarily that out of place being in black and white. And indeed, even in the colour movie, the colours are relatively muted, fairly saturated. It's not like everybody's running around in primary colours or anything like that. So, you know, again, you could always throw that argument in. But no, I absolutely hear you. You said to me, you know, it's to make it sort of feel a bit steampunk. And it does. It absolutely does. Now, of course, you know, the other thing we've talked about is you went over your target in terms of getting support, but of course, something like this, you could have spent £10 million on, and you know, you probably still wouldn't be necessarily happy with it. So there's always a restriction on budget. But before I ask the question about what might you have changed if you'd had more money or whatever, the scene where, so because this goes back to you talking about sort of like the silent style and almost you know, sort of slightly old fashioned style. There's the fight with you and
now hold
on,
hold on. Before we go any further, can I just say at this point in time, because I don't want to have to be cagey during the rest of this discussion, I'm going to say spoiler alert. We are going to be talking about the first episode in this discussion. If you haven't seen the first episode, just hit pause, 6 minutes, head over to thelastairship.com.
Yeah, it's not long, people. It's not a lot of investment.
6 minutes, come back, and then we won't be spoiling any of the what's going on. Okay, carry on. There's the fight scene.
There's the fight scene, where, you know, as somebody's talking and explaining things, so they're the voiceover, if you like, but the two of you are basically doing a silent scene, right? I've got a couple of questions around that. In a way, for me, that was the heart of the first episode, but let's not get too pretentious here. But the point is, you shot it on a beach. And I always remember with Monty Python and the Holy Grail, they didn't have a lot of money either. And I think it was Terry Jones saying, we need to keep shooting with people on top of mountains or walking, you know, through valleys, because it looks really expensive. You know, there is nothing more impressive than Mother Nature, and it's free to shoot people, you know, walking down a mountainside. And, you know, it's a beautiful shot on a beach, and it's also a deserted beach. It would have been ruined if, the McEwan family were right behind you, sort of like drinking lager or something. But, you know, it's a beautiful setup shot. Was it a conscious effort to use as much of your surroundings as possible to, if you like, add to the production values?
Of course it was. But there were a couple of different elements on that. And looking forward through the series, basically, the series is the story of this adventure of the airship travelling. And the trouble is, it's got to cross the Atlantic. And the Atlantic is an awful lot of ocean. So most of the series does take place in that airship. It is quite a confined series in that way. It does feel... I didn't want it, the whole series, to feel claustrophobic. I didn't want it to feel like, as you say, budget stuff. What I could have done is I could have done the whole thing in the airship and said, right, we'll just stay in the airship, we'll build one set, we'll do one computer-generated set, and we'll leave it at that. And in the sort of the way that if you watch Red Dwarf, you know, or even Star Trek or something like that, a lot of their episodes, they're just stuck. And it's what we call a box episode or a box room episode.
A bottle episode as well.
And, you know, it would have felt quite trapped. So where I have the first episode and the last episode, where the crew get to be outside of the airship, straight away I wanted to have as much space as I possibly could to contrast with the confines of the airship. And as soon as I say, right, I want a lot of space, I'm on the Isle of Wight. Obviously, I look around for the first scene and I think, well, I'm on an island where it's really beautiful, and of course it's the beach, and that presents its own whole set of problems. You talk about wouldn't have been much good if there was another family in the background. We do have the outtakes where dog walkers, suddenly a dog runs across the set, and you know, obviously you're on a beach, and the thing about a beach is you can see a long way on a beach. Which means once somebody starts walking into shot, you have to wait quite a long while till they're either out of shot or you change the shot. So just work around. But yeah, there certainly was that.
So did you have to get up really early for that shot then?
We didn't know. Luckily, living here, we shot it out of season. So we're actually, we waited till the main season was over. We left it down. But what we did, of course, have to do again was fit it in around the tides. We had to work out, I think we had... we did a lot of shooting out in the forest for the final scene that morning. Again, as you say, making use of space. And that afternoon, we had that tide time. But because the tides change a lot here, we did have to shoot it quite quickly. Because if not, when I cut it all together, what we would have found was, you know, one scene we're fighting and the tide's miles out. And then I, you know, we cut to a different camera angle and suddenly we've got the tide lapping around our ankles. So in that way, the by the sea is one of the worst places to film because the background is constantly changing. And we had the same thing with light and cloud and obviously everything else. Once you're outside, you have no control of the elements.
Okay. So the I guess it's an obvious question. I've already alluded to it. You know, there's only so much money that you had to do this, so you're going to sort of squeeze as much as you possibly can out of it. And you said a number of times, thank you so much for all your supporters. If you want to say that again, that's absolutely fine. But my question is, you know, if you had, you know, £10 million or whatever, what are the key things you would have changed about it?
Well, I think the first thing I would have changed, and I'm now processing my head, because actually we have ideas for Series 2 already. And the ideas for Series 2 are based on this series being a success and giving us a bit more money. But there are a few things. The main thing I would have liked is I would have liked to... and this doesn't show up much in Episode 1, but Episode 2, 3, 4 and 5, when we're on the airship a lot, you'll notice a lot of computer-generated backdrops and everything else. I would have loved to have filmed all the interiors on real, solid sets. And we've, you know, within each scene... we've got some real-life items, some real-life objects. I've used real sets where I can. One episode uses miniatures and things. But it would have been absolutely lovely to have been able to actually build full-scale sets that I could interact with a lot easier. It would have made life just a little bit more fun for the actors, a little bit easier for all of us, knowing exactly where the set was, knowing how to connect with it. It also would have given it a slightly more old-fashioned feel, in the way that sort of certain elements of the CGI, it's obvious a CGI backdrop. That's what we had the budget for. I think that's one of the big things I would have changed. But having said that and flipping that completely on its head, the lack of budget really does lead to some of my favourite moments in the series. I had ideas. I had these grand, highfalutin, high-scale ideas of things that I could have done during the series. And at the end of the day, one of my favourite gags, the one, I'm going to assume everyone's watched it now, one of my favourite moments from that first episode is the much later signpost. That's born of the
fact... Yes, that's an absolute... That felt very Greg to me.
It did, and it was a solution based on, right, okay... I had got a lot more that I thought about doing with the rope and how I could solve the rope problem and how he can climb up, and I could do a lot more physical gags. But being limited on sort of time in terms of the fact that that episode was already running long, I didn't have another 3 minutes to solve that problem. The fact that, as you say, the heart of that episode was the sword fight, and also Patrick Barry and Kevin Wilson, I've got to give a big shout out to, did the speech in that episode. That to me was the heart of the episode. For me to do anything more hanging on that rope just would then become Greg, you know, it would be an ego trip almost. Although, you know, it would have been, I'm sure it would have been funny, the ideas I had, but it would have become, and so because I had these limp constraints of money and constraints of time within the episode, I had to come up with another solution. And what it actually is it's probably the joke, the moment within the episode that more people have mentioned to me than any other moment. And that came out of dealing with it. And I think that is the basis of this series and the basis, I think, of an awful lot of comedy and very interesting stuff in a lot of films is playing with certain limitations and figuring out how to make them work. Let's not forget one of the funniest moments and one of the most memorable and iconic moments in the Indiana Jones films. Not that I'm for a second comparing my work with the Indiana Jones films. I am. They're the same level completely. But one of the most iconic moments is that wonderful moment where we have Indiana Jones Raiders of the Lost Ark, and you have Indiana Jones facing off against the guy with the swords, and the guy does all these huge, huge, huge stunts with the swords, and Indiana Jones pulls out his revolver and shoots him. And that was originally scripted to be a great, big, huge fight moment. And I believe Harrison Ford had got a little bit ill and couldn't stay on the screen for that long between trips to the loo. And so they had to cut that scene and have one day to shoot it. And so they said, well, okay, you'll just have to shoot the guy. Becomes an iconic moment based around working with limitations. And so, yeah, it's one of those really difficult things, and I've been talking to a few people, and in a way it would have been nice to make the series with an extra, you know, sort of 50, you know, it would have been nice if someone had come and said to me, right, here's a blank check, make the series, and they still wanted the same six-part episodes. That would have been lovely, but also at the same time I can't help feeling artistically it would have lost a little bit of the heart. A lot of it was struggling with our limitations to make it work.
And actually, on that point, I'll be honest with you, Greg, the thing I was worried about was tone, because all I knew was it was the Last Airship. The thing that I was thinking of is there's a terrible movie called The Last Airbender, but there's also this Last Starfighter, and last implies to me there's been a calamity. So I was thinking, you know, oh my God, you know, is this going to be sort of, it was a grim period of war between the Prussians and then, you know, we got then Greg pratfalling in the middle of it. It's like, yeah, I'm not sure that entirely works. But no, the thing is clearly sort of more of a comedy adventure, but also it's an indication of how generous you are, okay? You pulled all this together. This is your project, your baby. And most people in that situation, I actually... bear with me on this. So recently there's been a movie that's come out called The Disaster Artist. Have you heard of this?
I haven't,
Greg?
Heard of that one, no.
Okay, so it's based on a movie. There are a few movies that are so absolutely terrible, they're genius. There's a lot of movies that are just bad and unwatchable, but there are occasionally movies that just take it to a whole elevated reality. And there's this movie called The Room, which is what The Disaster Artist is based on. It's basically how The Room was made. And The Room, the best thing to do, Greg, is if you go on anybody, if you look, type in honest trailer The Room, it tells you everything you need to know about it. It's not necessarily suitable for children, but you start watching and go, oh my God, how was this ever made? Because it was this one guy's passion project / ego project, and it's all about him, and he's awesome in it, and blah, 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 blah. In theory, you could have gone that way. This is all about me, and I'm the central character, and I'm awesome, and I'm the hero, and I get the girl, and all this kind of stuff. But it isn't, okay? The opening scene is you're not even in it. And you are, I mean, you're clearly the heart of the story, and that's absolutely fine. But you're almost like the comic relief. Are you comfortable me calling you that?
Yeah, no, that sounds good to me. Yeah, no.
Okay, so what? But this isn't really a question. It's more an observation, in the sense that The tone is consistent. It's fun. It's light. I guess it's more like something like Firefly rather than, you know, like The Last Starfighter and everybody's dead. We need somebody to help us. Here comes Greg. Oh, he's fallen over. And I really like that. So you're already thinking about season two. So I guess my question is, and I'm also aware that, you know, time is already sort of upon us, but we're getting there. You know, what's going to cost you? This has taken a year. This is, you put a huge amount of effort into it. It has also cost you quite a lot of money as well. What's going to constitute success for you with number one to make number two?
It's a really, really difficult question, that, because the fact of the matter is that, well, first of all, let me just say about, you know, you've been really nice, and I'm going to fluff straight through that a little bit. But the fact of the matter is, when I sat down and I started writing the script, I knew that I didn't want it to be the Greg Show, because what makes me laugh and what works for me in this particular episode is I always know that the important thing about any comedy and any comedy character or anything else is the other people and the way it all works together. It's the situation that makes it all work. And as I say, this particular episode was born, this series was born out of really one short video that I made at the Buckinghamshire Steampunk Festival over a year ago now. And it was literally me and Felicity were there, and we decided we'd film ourselves having a duel. And so we did this silly little moment where I tried to shoot her and I missed, and then she shot me and my character died, and then I suddenly realised that I hadn't actually been shot at all, and I stood up and we both walked off. And it got really, really nice reactions from everyone. Everyone really, really enjoyed it. We did it silent. We did it black and white. It was such a simple 30-second thing. And what people kept mentioning was her roll, the way she rolled her eyes, the way this, you know, I was there being a bit of an idiot and she was rolling her eyes and doing all of this. And so I knew when I sat down to write it, first things first, I knew the important thing was not my character being an idiot. It was the way other people were going to react to it in terms of my character. But the other thing I wanted was, I really wanted the airship to have a heart, and I wanted to have it a storyline, and I wanted it to have really a heroic captain. I wanted that hero figure. It's a steampunk. We like someone to get behind. And that's never been a role that I've been interested in. I've never been interested in being the star of anything, really. I just happen to do my own shows. And so I knew Patrick, who plays Captain Morstan, I knew he'd be this great star. And so for me, it wasn't a case of stepping back or anything else. It wasn't a case of me giving up the limelight. And watch out for more Greg antics in episode two, actually. But throughout the series, you'll see there are, you know, sort of different episodes that feature on different ones of us and in different ways and have different ways of making it work. But overall, I never actually thought about this. I wanted it to be an ensemble piece. I do all of my work alone. I do all of my shows alone. I wanted to make this series, although I was going to be doing all the editing. And actually, I'll tell you in a minute why I didn't do all the editing on my own. But because the editing was going to be largely on me, I really wanted it to be a case of, yeah, when we're on screen, I want this to be an ensemble. I want everyone pulling together. I want to have fun as a team. And in that way, what would constitute success for me would be, one, especially those people who've put money into it, enjoy the series. That would constitute success for me. Success behind the camera, I've already enjoyed making it. I'm so pleased. You know, people are watching it. I'm hoping those watch numbers are going to go up and up and up. I'm going to do as much as I can to plug it. Really, in terms of making a second series, yes, this series, you know, we got the crowdfunding, but it did cost me a lot of time and money as well. I would be looking to make a second series really because I enjoyed making it. But as I mentioned earlier, the ideas I have for series two will take more money than the ideas I had for series one. And I've got a wedding and a honeymoon. So if people enjoy it enough, I mean, there's a link on the end to my Patreon page, my monthly supporting of the arts. If it makes enough money, or if people get behind it enough that I can crowdfund another series, you know, even if I only made as much money, I would work at trying to get a second series made on a similar level. But success for me is people enjoy it. Enough success to make a series two just means that I'd have enough money to cover the cost of a series two. And one shout out I want to give for episode one. when you watch that, Jim, you saw the sword fight. And the reason the sword fight works, and I have to be completely honest, because, you know, I take a lot of the credit for the edit. I've done a lot of the CGI myself. I've done an awful lot of this myself. One of the big things about that sword fight is the sounds in the sword fight. Now, what you may think we'd done, if you're someone that knew nothing about movie making, is you might think that we'd had a sword fight and recorded the sounds. As I mentioned, working on a beach has its own particular problems. It was incredibly windy that day. You can hear that under some of the dialogue. Again, if I'd had an absolute fortune, that's the only thing in the first episode I would have done, is I would have probably got a huge dubbing studio and all of this and that, or body mics and things like that. But what it means is we couldn't actually use any of the sound from the sword fight itself. Every time you see the swords hit each other with a clash or a clang, or you see the ground getting hit and there's a sound of dirt moving, or you hear a sword swishing through the air, every single one of those sounds was added. And it was actually Felicity who sat there with that episode, and without those sounds, that sword fight is nothing.
Yeah, I did not realise.
She went through and she decided... Yeah, you watch it back again. Every single, she had to decide, does that come just there? Does that come there? All these tiny, tiny little decisions about where the sound goes. So, yeah, I did do it on my own. I did, you know, this was my baby, but so many people put in little things that other people might not even realise. And, of course, thank you. Thanks to Flick for that. Thanks to everyone that supported this and to the wonderful cast. We got so many more actors appearing over the next few episodes as well. So, yeah, for me, successes, we all enjoyed it. The big success for me, personally, from a making side of it, is that every one of the actors that I've spoken to is talking to me about, can they get involved in the next series? In particular, Kevin, who was the guy who did most of the talking, the guy that owns the railway station in episode one, we are looking at bringing him back for more of the series in series two. He was that keen on it.
If you're ever looking for a balding middle-aged man, then I'm your man. I'm your go-to man. I'm throwing my hat in the ring right now. You ever need a steampunk podcaster,
I'm sure boy, can I help you. I'm sure we'll fit you in.
Anyway, right.
I'm sure we will fit you into series two, but yeah, I think we're probably pushing on.
So yes, you know,
look,
I guess this is one long plug, but very last thing, I'm going to give you 60 seconds for this. I believe that you are hoping that people can get to it rather than online. There might be other options. You've already sort of alluded to things like a sort of special CD or DVD, I should say. So yeah, are there other things afoot as to other ways they can consume The Last Airship?
There are. I will probably have it on the Patreon page as well. When we did the Indiegogo, there was, you know, there is a DVD that we will be putting out in the new year. But most important thing that people can do for me now is go to www.thelastairship.com, which will take you straight to the first episode. Watch the episode, and what you can really do if you are on YouTube, sign into your account, watch the episode. When you've watched it, subscribe. And then leave a comment. And that really does boost it, gets more people to see it. Also, if you watch the credits, there is a little clue how you can go through to my Patreon page and you can give a little bit of money in to help work. And that's all going in at the moment towards more video stuff, more working stuff. And it will all be going towards improving Series 2 when we get there. I'm going to say when, not
it's
if.
It's going to happen.
Honest with you, Jim. It has taken a year, but I've enjoyed it so much. There is going to be a series two. There's too many ideas for it not to do it. So you've heard it here first, people. Condensed History Gems exclusive. There will be a series two by hook or by crook.
Cool. Well, look, I that is time up there, Gregory. I hate to break it to you, but thank you so much. Thank you for lifting the curtain up, and we get to see behind the scenes. There we go. The DVD commentary of The Last Airship, which if you sync at the same time, it won't actually run at the same speed. But hey, at least you've had the man, the producer, director, writer, co-star, talking us through the entire, both the process and letting us know more about what to expect. Thank you very much, Greg.
And let me just say a massive thank you to my co-star here.
I'll take co-star.
My co-star, my co-host and co-star of this podcast. Yeah, Mr. Jem Deducci, who has been a massive support throughout this whole process. It's always something, even when we've not talked about it on air, Jem has always checked in with me over the last year to find out how things are going. Supported it in so, so many ways. We will find him a small role when we get to Series 2, I'm sure.
I'm going to be dung carrier, aren't I? That's my role.
But thank you very, very much to my wonderful co-host, Mr. Jem Deducci. And thank you to all for listening. Please do go and check out the web series. And please continue to share about the podcast. We will be back next week with Not Me endlessly talking about myself and plugging my own stuff. We'll be back with more actual history. But for now, thank you all very much for listening. Goodbye. And take care.